Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dick's.com/scorecardplus for details.
Welcome to Suffolk Matters, where all of Suffolk County meets the men and women of Suffolk AME. News, opinions, and insights you won't hear anywhere else. Here's your host, the president of New York's largest independent union, Suffolk AME's Dan Leveler.
Welcome to another edition of Suffolk Matters on Walk 97.5 and 94.3 The Shark, where Suffolk County meets the men and women of Suffolk AME. News and views you can't hear anywhere else.
So my guest this morning is New York State Senator Monica Martinez. Monica, good morning. Thank you for joining us.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
So I guess, you know, we do this every time, and you've been one of the most frequent guests on this show. But for people who are tuning in for the first time, why don't you let us know a little bit about your background? And let's start with how you came up through the education system and then how you got involved in public office.
Of course. Thank you. And again, thank you for having me. Just a little background. I was raised on Long Island from the age of 3 out in Nassau County, moved to Suffolk County, went to Brentwood Schools, graduated from Brentwood in 1995, went to Binghamton, then NYU, and then Stony Brook, where I obtained my degrees in history and then my master's in education. I then went to work as a teacher in the Brentwood School District in 2000. And then in 2010, I became an assistant principal for one of the middle schools, also in Brentwood. Then in 2013, I was asked to run for the Suffolk County Legislature, which I did successfully. And then in 2018, I ran for the New York State Senate, and again in 2022. So it's been quite a trajectory in terms of my public servants, my public service, but it's been a great ride.
Sure. And, you know, I mean, we talked in the past before, and I'll just note it, and we don't have to really get into the specifics, but there was a lot you were able to pick up in the classroom, and as being an administrator in the school district, that really applied to Suffolk County Legislature and now the Senate, and now, you know, obviously you're sitting on a very important committee, one that we watch closely, which is local government. So we're glad that you have the history that you have to deal with the issues that you're facing. But, you know, we talk about, you know, you run for Senate. You've now returned to the Senate in a district that looks very different than what the district used to look like. How did the district change, and how has that changed any policies or priorities you might have?
It actually changed drastically from the first district I used to represent, which was the 3rd, which used to encompass the towns of Islip and Brookhaven. This new district encompasses the town of Islip and Babylon. So instead of going east, I'm going west. And what I love about this new district, it was literally carved out from the middle of the island, right? So now sure. It encompasses areas from Hopog, and it goes into Islandia, into the Brentwood, Central Islip, Wyandanch, Wheatley Heights. And then it goes south down to Amityville, Lindenhurst, and a little bit south of Sunrise Highway. But I do have some villages. I do have both towns, but it is a district which is considered a majority-minority district.
Sure.
Where 60% of it, 64% is a minority population, where about 40%, 42% Hispanic, followed by 20% Black and Asian, 5%.
The ability to talk to a minority-majority district is probably, you know, very comfortable for you, right? You know, I mean, these were the issues that, you know, these were the folks, from my recollection, when you were at the legislature, that were coming to your office and saying, hey, we're not being represented here. We're looking to you to. So these are issues you're very much familiar with. It's got to be rewarding on some level to know that you're coming in with a ton of history and experience with this and sitting in a position where you can actually help.
Actually, I am. It's a district that, just ones that I had in the past too, that, as you mentioned before, have not been represented, or at least not well represented.
Right.
Where they've been neglected, no funding has been issued to them. It's a community that needs love, and it's a community that I also understand, coming from Brentwood, living in Brentwood, you see the representatives that want to help and those that don't. Sometimes that cultural shift is there, and I think myself, coming from the background that I have, it gives me the opportunity to be able to to communicate and understand, not just sympathize, but also empathize of the issues that take place within that district.
Sure. You know, and again, from the labor perspective, you know, you being someone that was familiar with the labor movement, you know, coming up through it, it made conversations with you that much easier. You know, there was a ton of background we just didn't have to go into and have to introduce myself, say that I'm from labor, what labor is, why labor matters, and then ask a question. And I think you'll find the same thing now with your district. You know, you're able to just sit down and get to the issue. Someone in your constituency can sit down, say, this is the issue. You can say, I understand, and then start working on change, which is great. Not only is your district minority majority, but you're also the only senator in the majority in that the Democrats have control of the Senate, and you are the only Democratic senator in Suffolk County. And I wanted to restate it that way because it can be confusing with saying minority, majority, whatever else. How's this impacted your workload, right? You know, I mean, you're the only one in Suffolk that can really move things. And again, like I said, you know, I already referenced you're on some very important committees, and you chair one that is very important to us. You've got to be swamped.
I am. Definitely kicked up since the last time I was there, but it's good. I'm learning a lot. I'm learning from different areas of New York State, being chair of local government. Obviously, I'm used to the Long Island politics and the Long Island governments, but you have other counties across the state that need help and also have the same issues that we have on Long Island and in Suffolk County. So I'm actually very proud to be chairing this committee, and I have the opportunity to speak to other mayors across the state, sure, other county executives across the state, council people, and really listen to them and their needs. And that's really what I want to become for them, is a resource that they can have. There are many proposals that come out of Albany that some of them tend to hurt our local municipalities.
Sure.
Some of them help them. So for me, it's very important that I take this leading role in making sure that whatever the local municipalities are asking for, it does not hurt them, or whatever we're proposing in Albany does not hurt them either.
Sure. It's fair to say, not only do you have to represent your constituents in your community, but you've got to represent the greater of Suffolk County's issues, being in a position to be able to advance those things. So again, a ton of work. But, you know, one thing worth noting, and you know, you could speak to this, is you've always worked in a bipartisan fashion. So, you know, having the other senators from the other side of the aisle, so to speak, from Suffolk County, you're still able to get things advanced. You're still able to maintain relationships with these folks, understand what issues their constituency brought forward, and you know, help advance the best for everyone.
It's the only way to work. It's the only way to function. If you're not working across the aisle, you're not getting things done. And we can talk how nasty and dirty politics can be during election time, but once election is over and the dust settles, it's time to govern. And I've been one who reaches across the aisle. I have met with many of my Republican colleagues already regarding issues that are affecting Long Island and Suffolk County in particular.
Sure.
And we just sit down and talk, right? Because they have their responsibility as well to represent their districts, even though they are in the minority.
Well, they just have they have a smaller voting block, and it doesn't necessarily mean, but I think people associate, you know, the Democrats and the Republicans as just being one group, one vote, and that's not necessarily the way it works. There are folks from either side of the aisle that cross over on issues and whatever else. So,
of course.
Yeah.
Yes, and happens all the time. I've crossed over on certain votes, and they have crossed over on certain votes. It's really what comes down to protecting our constituencies that we represent.
Sure. You know, so we'll continue on with this chair of local government. Again, very important issue for us, and something that that we think is worth noting, something that really puts you in a very good position to do the most good for Suffolk County, the towns, the other counties across the state, the whole nine. And that's why, you know, I'm going to continue to harp on that because, again, like I say, very important issue. So what is the committee responsible for, essentially, the local government committee? What is its function?
It's a committee that meets once a month, and we bring legislation forward from different senators, both sides, and each bill, each piece of legislation that comes through is either most likely to protect or help a local municipality. We've had two sessions already, two committee sessions that we have held. And in one of them, we passed legislation to assist our first responders, our EMS, our firefighters. Mm-hmm. And then the other meeting was focusing on tax abatement and relief of taxes in certain municipalities across the state.
you're the chair of that committee, so there's additional responsibilities there. And, you know, I mean, what's the extra, you know, rather than just being a committee member, being the committee chair, what's the difference in the work?
Difference is I get to decide which bills go through and which ones will benefit. So, for example, if there's a bill that's going to hurt one of our local municipalities, I will not introduce that bill, right?
Sure.
It's going to be controversial unless it's something that is very much needed and therefore it should be a vote that everyone takes.
Right.
But these are bills that we look through that senators put forward, they would like to see introduced, and depending on what it is, we put it in, right? So we like to remain in kind of do packages, right? So we did the EMS, we did taxes. You know, we try to make it a concise committee where we're passing good policy legislation.
That makes sense. And, you know, so it'll pass through your committee and then still gets a floor vote. So then it still gets to go to all the senators to consider. So if it's something that's decided in committee, it's now not done. It just gets to advance to the next step.
Correct. And some of these bills are either reported straight to the floor or some of them have to go through other committees if it involves a different type of collaboration from a different committee. So, for example, sometimes it has to go through codes or rules, or it could go through agricultural markets, depending what it is. Right. So if it has a different committee that it has to go through, it'll report it to that committee.
Sure. And then, you know, I mean, that's still not the end of it. So let's say the Senate and the Assembly both say it's good. The governor still gets to decide, right? So
yes, she does have the power to veto.
Yeah.
And hopefully some of the vetoes that have happened, we always go back and try to revisit that, see if we can make any amendments. Because some of these bills that are passed by both houses are good bills, and it could be that the governor may not like a certain portion of it. And then you can go back and make amendments, and that's the beauty of it.
So, you know, a priority for labor has been reform on the tier system, and I'll just give a brief overview of what that means. When someone takes a civil service job, the date that they start determines which tier they're in for retirement purposes and you know, a few other factors. And over the years, you know, tier one, obviously the first one, most folks would consider the best. And over the years, things have whittled down and whittled down and whittled down. And tiers five and tier six, which are the current ones that you could be hired in, well, tier six now is the one that you could be hired in, but tier five is another one we feel we need to address. They provide less benefits and require longer contributions from employees that come into civil service titles. We're finding that, let's call it the 60s and the 70s, it was common knowledge, you know, you wanted a government job any way, shape, or form. You could get one, get it, keep it. And that was the way it was. Nowadays, we're finding people, even in some job titles that we find to be higher earning, right? Engineers, you know, deputy sheriffs out in Suffolk County, a few other, you know, examples that I can give where folks come on the job, they stay a year or two and they leave, they go somewhere else. It's just not as attractive to stay. And we feel that the tier that they're hired in is partly contributing to that. And so this has been a priority issue for us, you know, just addressing tier equity. And again, you know, I mean, it should be obvious to anyone who's listening, but if it's not, you know, these things come with a cost.
Mm-hmm.
So to ask reforms out of tiers five and six and to bring them on, you know, in parity with tier four, that'll have an impact on what the New York State Comptroller does and various other costing mechanisms. But we do know that we want to continue to attract our best and brightest so that you get the best possible government service. It is a huge value to the taxpayer to do the things that government does rather than doing it through the private sector, which we find to be much more expensive. But creating this equity that we're asking for between tiers four and then, you know, making tiers five and six closer to tier four, that would come with a cost, not quite as much as privatizing, but it would come with a cost. And this has been a major issue for us, something that we've really been talking to a lot of folks up in Albany about. I guess the question really is, you know, how have these deficiencies impacted recruitment and retention of civil service in Suffolk County and across the state in your observation?
You hit it, right? You pretty much said it all. And people want to go into government jobs for those benefits, for the pension, for retirement. I'm tier four and I was lucky to come in tier four, right? But if I were to leave the system right now and come back, I would go into tier six. And we are having a hard time retaining individuals and qualified individuals. I was not really aware of how antiquated our civil service system is in the state of New York. It is a system that needs to be fixed. It needs to be brought up to speed to modern times. And this is something that I am working. But just regarding Tier 6 and Tier 5, it is an issue that all members in the Senate are concerned about. We understand the importance of it. We understand it needs to be fixed. We are working to put it in the budget. I'm not a big policy person of putting policy in the budget.
Right.
But there's certain things that have to be tied to fiscal impacts. And this would have a fiscal impact. So therefore would really benefit to have it in the budget.
Right.
And in our working groups, we're pushing to at least have Tier 6 to be in parity with Tier 5. Right. Obviously, we want both to be within the Tier 4 bracket. But at the same time, we also need to do this smart, and we need to look at the fiscal implication that it will have. But it's definitely something that we are working to change and reform.
Sure. To that end, you know, a number of folks are looking at these things, right? And, you know, we speak with the comptroller's office. We understand that there's going to be a cost with something like this. We also understand that while we're pushing for tiers 5 and 6 reforms, and that would have a cost and an impact, localities, the local municipalities are looking to make lesser contributions to help their bottom line. That would have a cost. And then folks that are already retired and are on a fixed income for life, you know, and when you hear about a pension, you know, I think a lot of people think, you know, $150,000, $200,000 a year, that's, you know, wholly untrue, except for a small minority of people. Generally speaking, it's $30,000, $35,000, sometimes $40,000, $45,000, you know, but that's your number for life, and things continue to get more expensive. So the retiree component is looking to bring in a cost of living adjustment. Here's these three groups all asking for money, all with a very good reason, all at the same time, and this complicates things, right? So, but I think it's worth pointing out, when we talk about tiers 5 and 6, Tiers 5 and 6 make up over 50% of the current employees working in government. And our concern is the quality of product that gets pushed out. Not because these people in Tiers 5 and 6 don't want to do a good job. It's that they can't afford to, and they end up moving on. So you end up with people that come in and train. And you know, any position, you come in and train, takes a little time to get up to speed. Once they get up to speed, they go somewhere else and make more money. That's not going to be good for government, providing government services.
And it's not. And I'm glad you brought that up, because in all the conversations I've been having with individuals regarding civil service, 911 operators has come up, right? Where they come in, they want to work, but it's not a good paying job, nor do they have the benefits, as you were saying. And you train them, and it takes a while for that spot to be filled.
And an expense to train them. Yeah.
Correct. Mm-hmm. Right. So not only are you spending to train them, but now you have an empty seat again after you train somebody and they have left to go somewhere else. To me, it's very important. And as you know, I've been a big supporter of 911 operators. Sure. I actually introduced two bills that would support our 911 responders. And one of the things that caused me to do this was the cyber attack that took place in Suffolk County, where our 911 operators are now using pen and paper, right, and trying to contact our local enforcement to do their job as well.
Right.
What was brought to my attention is maybe having one entity where all 911 calls go to in the event of an emergency only, a switchboard, and really come up to the times that we're in. Whereas, for example, when the cyber attack took place, if there was an emergency, we don't want to lose our response time.
Right.
And if we had a main switchboard in the event of tragedy or any type of, you know, for example, a cyber attack, there are people who are already there taking these calls and then informing our local responders in the county that it responds to, right? So that's something that I am working to get past this session. I think it's going to be very important, but it will have a physical implication as well with everything. But it's our job to find the money. It's our job to make sure that we have revenue streams coming in and allocating them accordingly.
Sure. And, you know, I spoke to the folks at the 911 call center in Suffolk. I spoke to the folks at Fire Rescue. And those are the two main emergency response systems inside of Suffolk County. And, you know, I did ask them, you know, is there a major difference between the two jobs? And they laughed. They said, yeah, there's a world of difference. You know, the jurisdiction lines are different. You know, a 911 caller is not going to know the meets and bounds of a particular fire district or whatever else. But the idea of having one central call center that knows, okay, this now has to go right to Fresno, this has to go to right to 911, you know, right for police response or EMS response or whatever else. So I want to assuage fears when we're talking about what you're talking about, this main switchboard, that you're not talking about, you know, one person comes in and trains to do, you know, three different functions, that they know how to do EMS, they know how to do fire, and they know how to do police dispatch. For so many reasons, that doesn't work. But the fact of the matter is, having a central switchboard that now knows, okay, this is where this has got to go, this is where that's got to go. Many times, 911 calls come in, and it's actually for a fire rescue, and then mm-hmm. it's got to get switched over. And that's just a little bit of a lag time. That's the difference between getting emergency responders on the scene. You know, we've talked about before, the first responders are these call operators. Correct. So efficiencies in that system mean efficiencies in response overall.
And with every bill, I always try to get the input of those that it may affect, sure. obviously, right? Sure. So you will be seeing this bill come to you soon, so you can check it out.
Absolutely.
Two numbers, actually, is the 4560 and 4583 Senate bills, which will be coming your way. So you can take a look at them and see how that would affect you, but it's more
no, but
of
hey,
a...
No, listen, it is my job, right? And there's going to be folks across the state where it is their job to look at these bills mm-hmm. and inform you and your committee... and the other committees that get affected by this, and then, you know, the overall Senate, you know, make sure that everybody's educated on what does and what doesn't work, right? This is,
yes.
So people are getting to see firsthand and get to hear it just in our dialogue. This is how some of the work in Albany gets done. These types of conversations where you figure out what's the right way to get things mm-hmm. done, how does everything work the right way, and we have these conversations.
And it's progress, because this sure. bill could affect Suffolk County differently than it can affect Nassau County, right? So... That's why these conversations have to happen. At the end, you want a piece of legislation that works, right? I do not like to introduce bills just to introduce bills. My bills that I introduce, I try to make sure that they are bipartisan. I try to make sure that they don't hurt anyone and that it will bring a positive effect
and that
to New York.
Pass, right? You know, like I've gotten the sense from some people, I'm not going to call anyone out by name, they put out bills in order to do press releases and try to embarrass people. And that's what, you know, I think the average voter, that's what they hate about the political process. They want folks like you that are saying, not only do I want to vet everything, not only do I want to make sure that everything's good, you know, that the impact is good, but also that I'm doing this in a way that it actually passes. It's not just some story in the newspaper. It changes the way the rules work and therefore has that positive impact.
And at the end, I want the governor to sign it.
Yes, we always want that.
Which is the most important part, too.
Yes. So, and I guess it's just worth noting, just before I go on to other legislative priorities, you know, we talked about the Tier 6 and the Tier 5 reforms. We also talked about the problem of folks not necessarily wanting to stay on the job, getting a little bit of training and leaving. And it's worth noting that as multiple levels of people are working on this, the Labor Department in the state, and particularly the Commissioner Reardon, is looking at educating folks on the fact that, you know, when you come into a government setting, you start working inside a government setting, if you want 4, 5, 6, 10 different types of jobs throughout your career, you can stay inside the civil service system and jump around to these different jobs and retain your protections, your benefits, and everything else, and still be able to walk out with a pension and a career of altruism, you know, that comes with being a public servant. It's very much multifaceted, this attempt to fix these problems. You know, a lot of people are thinking about different ways to tackle these priorities. But what are some of the priorities that you had that you're especially proud of?
Every bill I introduce and get passed is important to me. Every single bill has a nexus to something that I care about or something that was brought to my attention. For example, I just mentioned the 911 bills as a former teacher. Schools are very important for me, making sure that our funding is there. I do have two bills that I have introduced as well, meant to protect our schools and our children. We are living in a time right now that our schools have become targets of mass shootings, and they're vulnerable. They're not even part of the issue as to why they're going in. But one of my bills, many schools, as you've seen, are hiring guards, security guards, whether they're armed guards or unarmed guards, whether they're inside the buildings, outside the buildings. My bill, all it would do is ask for additional training for these individuals who mm-hmm. are in our schools to learn about the child as a whole, right? It's a holistic approach, because some of these guards are active law enforcement. They may be retired law enforcement. And it's great that we have them in there, but sometimes we also need to learn how the child acts and how the child is, or learn about the school itself and the climate and the culture, and just have those sensitivity trainings to know how to deal with a child within the schools,
right,
when there are certain issues that are taking place. So this bill has been asked by the School Board Association to train our security guards, and that's a bill that I'm proud of. I think it would bring a lot of safety to our schools, again, whether they're armed or unarmed, but they need to know how a child acts.
Sure. No, that makes a ton of sense. I hate to do this to you. We're getting closer to the end of the show, and there is the bill that I wanted to discuss with you, which is 4597, and it has to do with, you know, sewer construction and funding for that and everything else. And, you know, obviously it's a very important bill for us, but I wonder if you'd speak to, you know, from your perspective, what this bill does and you know, why you see it as important.
We live here on Long Island in Suffolk County. Many, if not, know, but Suffolk County is only a quarter sewered. We talk about revitalization. We talk about downtowns. We talk about housing. We talk about transit-oriented development. But yet we don't have the infrastructure to do so because we are limited in what we can do. What this would do is just give local municipalities the ability to construct and build this infrastructure that is so needed on Long Island.
Sure. And, you know, we think... sewers is better for the environment. We think it's better for businesses. We think it's, you know, I've talked about this ad nauseum on the show, so I don't want to go into the difference between a restaurant being able to serve with paper plates versus dishes and whatever else. Sewers are a good thing. I think people want to see them there. We appreciate all of your efforts, everything you've done. You've had a career that has spanned so many different facets in life, from education to administration and then into policy, whether it was on the local side or now on the state side. So thank you for everything you do. Thank you for all you do for your constituencies and the folks that you represent, but especially for the AME members. You had many opportunities when you were on the legislature to hear from us and hear about our issues. Your door was always open. You always listened. Now, you know, I don't know how you can shut your door with everything going on. And I appreciate your continued advocacy on the state level on behalf of our members and the residents in Suffolk County.
I appreciate that.
And thank you again for joining us. I know how busy you are. I don't know how you have time to sleep. Thank you so much.
3 hours is always needed.
Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. And as you know, my door will always be open for you.
I appreciate it. To our listeners, we'll speak to you next week.